B-Pod Studios.
Sports Hub Headlines.
The Bruins continued their seven-game homestand with a fourth straight win last night, 3-2 over Philadelphia at TD Garden. Tuukka Rask made 25 saves in net in his return, and David Pastrnak took care of the rest with his 11th career hat trick. The Bruins are suddenly only 5 points out of third place in the division after 7 wins in 8 games. They host Nashville tomorrow night. Patrice Bergeron was voted on to the Atlantic Division All-Star team yesterday. Charlie McAvoy is one of the many who's now in the running to be added by the fans to that team. The balloting ends late on Monday night. The NHL yesterday suspended Montreal's Chris Weidman for a game. He headbutted the Bruins' Eric Halla 2 nights ago. As for the Patriots, they travel to Buffalo today. They play the Bills in the cold tomorrow night in round one of the playoffs. Kendrick Bourne's team is ready.
Just knowing the stakes and everything, every play is important, every detail, every single thing is important. So I thought we've been having a good week so far, and guys been locked in, guys, you know, about playing hard and longer than the other team. So
Patriots didn't have either Isaiah Wynn or Kyle Duggar at practice yesterday. They and 11 others on the team are listed as questionable for the contest. In other NFL news, the Houston Texans have fired head coach David Culley after 1 season. Former Patriots assistant Gerard Mayo and former Miami head coach and past assistant Brian Flores are believed to be the two top candidates to replace him. And the Celtics visit Philadelphia tonight. Marcus Smart is questionable with his thigh bruise. Grandy and Max have the pregame at 6:30 and the tip-off at 7 right here on your flagship radio station for the Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by Boston Vision, formerly Boston Laser. New name, new look, but same commitment to five-star patient results. Mention this ad and get $500 off your LASIK procedure. Book a free evaluation today at bostonvision.com. I'm John Wallach on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 7:30.
Jaylen Brown's hands, 3 is in the air. He got it. He got it. It happened.
This is Jaylen Brown. You're listening to the home of the Celtics, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
They get you going every day.
I don't care for the sportsman-like talk.
Toucher and Rich.
At least let me live in a fantasy world that for 3 hours you hate each other.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, we're Toucher and Rich. Watch us on Twitch, twitch.tv, or the Twitch app. Join the dozens that do that on a regular basis. Bert Breer, senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB, joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Breer, hello.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Okay, so there's eight coaching openings right now that I understand. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, the Texans fired their coach. Why the delay? Is it Cal McNair figuring out that he owned a team, or what was going on?
I think as much as anything else, it was that they weren't in the rush that the other teams might have been. And, you know, these things can get competitive. And so, you know, I think the Texans, put it this way, I think Nick Caserio hasn't had an idea throughout this season of who his long-term coach might be. He also never seemed in any particular rush to go and get that person. And so, like, I think that they felt like it made sense for them to go through the full process of assessing everything. And, you know, I think that they looked at their coaching staff and said, okay, like, we're going to need a change on the offensive side of the ball. This assistant needs to go. You know, and then ultimately they came to the decision that that just holding the fort for another year with David Culley wasn't going to work. And by the way, I think a big part of this is they're going into a critical offseason. This will be the offseason they trade Deshaun Watson. They're going to be picking at the top of every round. Presumably they'll have a lot more draft capital than they have right now because of the potential for, you know, a big return in the Deshaun Watson trade. And they've got a lot of cap space, and they've got a promising rookie class. Like, even though they didn't have first and second round picks, they've got 3 or 4 rookies that they really think they can help. They can start to build around there. So I think it was a combination of, like, Nick having an idea that, like, this wasn't going to be a wide open search. So he wasn't in a huge rush to jump into that pool. And, you know, wanting to do a full assessment, you know, based on, like, how critical this coming off season is going to be for them.
Okay, so first of all, don't feel bad for Dave Culley. Apparently, he's walking away with over $22 million for one season as coach. I guess that's the money that was owed him, I saw yesterday. But, Bert, do you know Aaron Reese? He's a guy who covers the Texans for The Athletic. Is he a fairly reputable reporter from everything you know?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I think so.
Okay, there was a report that came out yesterday, and so he wrote, he said, Nick Caserio was part of Dave Culley's practices and was on the headset advising Culley on game management. He said it'll be interesting to see if any of that changes with a new Texans head coach. Okay, that's interesting, but I think that there are some people who might have known that he helped out while he was here, apparently, according to reports.
I mean, you saw it. I mean, I think they even might have showed that on TV at some point, didn't they?
They did. That's not the interesting part to me. The interesting part was, because this is another report from this guy, said Caserio was also on the headset in New England. In Houston, it was him and Romeo Crennel talking to Culley. Culley admitted that Caserio told him to let New England score at the end of that game, and it didn't compute for Culley. Pretty damning admission. So according to Aaron Reese, who covers the Texans for The Athletic, he said that when the Patriots played them this year, Nick Caserio, in his headset, told Dave Culley to let New England score at the end of that game. Can you believe, is that believable to you? Once again, this is a reputable reporter, but did the Patriots win that game because Nick Caserio
told them to let him score? But that was a clock situation, right?
Wasn't it like
if the Patriots had just held onto the ball at the end, they could just run the clock out and kick the field goal or something like that? I can't remember how that came. I don't think it was like letting the Patriots win. I think it was we're not going to get the ball back unless.
Yeah, I mean, this happens a lot. I mean,
but the fact that it's the GM making such a even if that's the case, that's a major decision at the end of a game, and that's the GM and not the coach making it. How normal is that? Is that something that
it's not normal, but it was normal here. And like Nick Caserio had such a unique role here. And honestly, I can remember writing this. I think it was in June of 2019. And you guys remember when the Texans fired Brian Gain and, you know, Bill O'Brien had gained more power and the Texans were going to try and get Nick Caserio then before Bill O'Brien was gone. And I remember talking to some people about it and why Nick wanted to go at that point. And you remember the Patriots blocked him. They had that weird thing in his contract that allowed them to block him.
Yes, right? Yes.
And I remember, and I wrote this too, and you guys can look this up if you want.
I'm going to look it up to make sure.
Hey, you got Google like everybody else, Fred. So you need to go.
Wait, why is that an insult?
John just reacted
like you said my mom's a whore or something. I mean, I have Google like everyone else.
Bert's peacocking. I got receipts, bitch. Come on.
I was busting his balls about not believing him. Go ahead.
No, I deserve crap for that. But I do remember writing like that. One of the reasons Nick wanted to go in 2019. Was because he'd been really careful about which opportunity he would take to be a GM somewhere else. And his position in New England was so unique that it was going to be tough to recreate that somewhere else without having a Patriot-centric head coach. Mm. Because if you looked at it, it wasn't just being on the headset. He's out of practice in New England.
Yeah.
Like, he was in the middle of drills at times.
Okay, how unique is that? Because I don't know if I've heard of that
it's
before.
It's rare.
First of all, I didn't know he did it here. I've never heard of that before, actually.
Well, and that was sort of the point I was making was that, like, his role in New England was almost as like a quasi coach. And I remember always hearing he loved that part of it, right? Like, he loved the fact that he had this really unique role.
Sure.
And so if he was going to go be a general manager somewhere else, like an optimal situation for him would be able to recreate that somewhere else, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's why, like, going and working with Bill O'Brien appealed to him. One of the reasons why they had a good relationship, too, on top of that. But, like, in 2009 and 10 and 11, Nick Caserio was on the offensive headset with Bill O'Brien when Bill O'Brien was the new offensive coordinator here, when he replaced Josh McDaniels in the first place. And then in 12, when Josh came back, he remained on the offensive headset. And Josh will tell you this. I mean, Nick was on there helping him with down and distance, helping him with game management stuff. Like, Nick was involved. And so, like, I think a big part of like what he loved about the job that he had here was that he was like sort of almost like a hybrid executive coach.
Okay.
And you can imagine for a guy like David Culley, who's 65 years old, who's been in the league forever and ever, like he's getting his first shot to be a head coach. Like, what the hell is the GM doing on the headset?
Yeah, that's got to be frustrating.
Yeah.
But I do have a question, and I saw you addressing this on Twitter, and normally these things don't register, but this is odd. There is only one black coach in the NFL now.
It's crazy.
That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, so what's the – like? And listen, I don't believe – I know the pressure to win in the NFL, and I don't believe that, you know, that owners – That it would be very few owners that would sacrifice the best candidate based
on
race.
That's what it is.
Right.
I don't think it's like, I don't think it's overt
but,
racism.
Okay, but no. I think it's right. I don't believe that with the pressure to win the NFL that these owners are like, well, I'm not hiring a black guy. But so is it like the opportunities
to
get into positions that would lead you to be a head coach?
That's one of them. I think there are two other things. One of them is like, I think there's definitely like that pipeline issue, which is like quarterbacks have become so important in the NFL that teams, you know, are skewing in a very big way towards hiring guys who have that background. And generally, quarterbacks, coaches, and offensive play callers have been white. So like that's definitely part of it.
Sure.
I think there are two other things that I've heard a lot of people are frustrated with. The first thing is that the excuse they always get from owners is, well, I was more comfortable with this guy. You know, like I really was able to kind of strike up a relationship like in a short period of time over
which is
a couple
damning.
Of with this guy.
Yeah, which is damning, yeah.
Right, which is like always like that is like a huge point of frustration. And I honestly think there's something the league can do about that. The league needs to do something to create more situations where these owners are in the room with bright young assistants. And I'm not just talking about bright young assistants, period. Get them around them so they know who's good. And so when they go in these interview settings, they at least have some background with some of these guys, right?
Right.
Like just normal professional development stuff for young coaches, I think would be really helpful. So that's number one. Number two, the other point of frustration that I think is incredibly valid is black coaches feel like the plug gets pulled on them much faster than it happens with white coaches. And obviously the Culley situation, it's an example of it. No question about it. But there are other ones
too. I'm thinking of the two coaches that you could argue probably deserve to keep their jobs are both black, Culley and Flores. Those are the two ones I could say those guys probably did enough to keep their gig.
I realize why Culley was fired. Let's because this leads into it, and we don't have a ton of time before we have to break. Was the Flores firing okay? This is great, Rich. I don't know if you read this. So a report came out that Flores at one point told Tua, "I wish I drafted Mac Jones."
Right. Okay, Fred, we have to talk about that report because the ultimate.
Let me say one thing just to kind of put a bow on it.
Yeah,
like there's reason why Culley was fired. There's reason why Flores was fired, but it just feels like to a lot of black coaches, like there's always a reason why it's happening earlier, you know, and
well,
then it's
rare that
a black coach gets that extra year
that
we see sometimes with other, like Matt Rhule in Carolina, for example, getting that extra year, the Giants intending to give Joe Judge that extra year before he walked himself out on the plank. Like that's the frustration.
All right. We'll break and then we'll get into the situation with Flores. Also, if the coaching tree of Belichick is tainted at this point, because, I mean, not only have these coaches been fired.
It's gone. There's no coaching tree right now.
Right, I know, but Belichick and Judge were embarrassments. I mean, they embarrassed themselves. They embarrassed the franchises. And the owners came out and said as much. So we'll talk about that with Bert Alk.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
say in the morning, you'll be talking about all day.
This is a dumb conversation. Like, you know, why the hell not? That's what we do.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Hey, we're the Toucher and Rich radio program. Bert Breer is the senior NFL reporter for MMQB. He joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. And, Bert, we were talking about Brian Flores and maybe the reasons he got fired, and there was a report.
I want to wait 1 second because we have an audio clip that I want to play that is pretty interesting with how the story changes when certain things are revealed. But before we get to that, I do want to ask you about Nick, you know, the opening that's there now, because it, all the reports are that they want somebody who is connected to the New England Patriots. Casario's there. Right. Easterby's there. Is this a Flores or is this a Mayo or is this a Josh McDaniels fit, in your opinion? Like, who is going to get that gig? Or is there, you know, some, you know, mystery guy? Is, you know, Steve Belichick? You know, who knows?
Yeah, that's who they'll hire. They're going to go get Steve Belichick.
Yeah, so, I think it's going to be one of the three guys you mentioned. And I think it's going to kind of come down to like what Nick prioritizes. Now, one of the things that's interesting is Nick had a huge hand in putting the coaching staff together there. Like, there were a couple of hires on that staff that were directly hired by him. And I think part of this is going to come down to, does Nick want to pick the staff around the head coach, or does he want to hand the keys over to the head coach? Because if he wants to pick the staff around the head coach, then maybe bringing in Gerard Mayo makes the most sense. They do like Mayo. I obviously Nick has a relationship with all three of these guys. Easterby's got a relationship with all three of these guys.
Well, they're fans.
And so Mayo would be the guy you'd be projecting forward. Flores is, you know, I think brings like the recent head coaching experience to the table. But you'd have to be confident in his plan and his ability to fill out the staff because of what happened in Miami. And then Josh, obviously.
Do any of those keep Deshaun Watson around? I know Deshaun had a major problem
absolutely
with ownership.
Okay. I think it's impossible. And I know people have said like, well, you know, like maybe if he brought in Flores because he wanted to go to Miami and he saw Flores as a plus, he would rethink things. The relationship between Deshaun Watson and Cal McNair, my understanding, is completely irreparable. Like, there's no coming back from it. And
which is what you want from an owner. Is to really start having problems with the players.
So where does Deshaun Watson go now? I mean, because that leaves the whole Miami thing is interesting because no one can figure out what the hell's going on.
Well,
hang on.
Let's at least while we're on coaches, I don't want to bounce around too much.
Well, then let's get to this thing about Tua and that because we have the clip now. So this is from Mike Lombardi. Now, Mike Lombardi was on a podcast called the GM Shuffle, which is the failed follow-up to the Super Bowl Shuffle.
It was very frustrating to Wallach because he half read it and thought it was a podcast about the Curly Shuffle.
Which would drive him insane.
That's on me. Yeah.
All right. I want you to listen to this. This is Mike Lombardi talking about the situation, and here's what he had to say.
But if you're really honest, are you going to sit there and say, I can build a team around Tua? Because that's what Ross wants to hear. That's what Brian Flores wouldn't say. I mean, we've seen all the conversations that Flores basically was, you know, had with Tua, where Flores told Tua at halftime of the Tennessee game, this has all been reported. I mean, look, I don't think Flores was shy about telling him, hey, I should have picked Mac Jones. I mean, I don't think he was shy about telling him that. In fact, I know that he wasn't. You know, I remember I said there was commentary between the head coach and Tua during the season, and I wouldn't reveal what the conversation was. Well, the conversation was, hey, if I knew you were going to be this bad, I'd have picked Tua. I would have picked Mac Jones. That's the conversation. So, you know, I don't think there was any. So the next guy come in, if Flores felt that way, how is the next guy going to come in and fix?
Okay, so that story comes out. That's Mike Lombardi. He goes, remember the conversation that I told you mid-season that I didn't want to tell you about? Well, here it is. It was that Brian Flores told Tua, I wish I would have drafted Mac Jones. So that story gets out there. And then about 3 hours after that, Mike Lombardi tweets this. I misspoke on the pod. He retweeted the quote. And those were my words for Flores, not his. But yeah,
I got a phone call.
Yeah, I got a phone call from Tua or somebody saying,
"Not Tua.
Why are you lying?"
It wasn't like, from Tua.
No, I think Tua was probably fine with it being out there.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't from Tua. It was from Flores saying, "I'm going to kick your ass."
Like, why are you either A, say, or B, lying about it? But how do you get that wrong? Like, if you're Lombardi, so let's say you get a call from Flores.
I don't think you got it wrong. I think you got a phone call.
Well, then
my guess is what he said was told to him in confidence, and he probably felt like, oh, well, you know, now that he's gone, I can tell the story.
Well, yeah. And,
so you believe that happened?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know because I can tell you, Flo was out on Tua, like, and I don't think it was a huge secret that, like, even before the draft, I remember, so somebody said to me, this is a funny story, somebody said to me that, like, maybe 3 months before the draft, Flores was so out on Tua that he said in a draft meeting, "I'm going to wear a Tua jersey to my press conference at the combine, so everybody thinks we're taking him. Ha ha! There's no way it's happening." And then they wound up taking him 3 months later. Well,
what communication going on in the Miami office?
Yeah,
that's true. But what's interesting about it is that one decision.
That one decision led to the whole thing, right? Yep. The decision to take, if Justin Herbert is the quarterback, do you think this is happening?
No. All right. Well, so let's talk about the Belichick coaching tree. And if you would hire someone in the feelings around the league, because again, Patricia and Judge not only got fired, they're borderline insane. I mean, Patricia managed to alienate his team, the media, and the fan base before the first game he coached. And we've seen what Judge did. And Mara has come out and said it's the most embarrassed he's ever been in his life as an owner. Mm-hmm. What is it about these guys that makes them lunatics? They behave like lunatics. I truly believe Patricia and Judge behaved like lunatics.
I mean, look at what happens to the staff, you know, and look at how those guys have churned through staff and all the different offensive coordinators. I think Patricia went through three in 3 years in Detroit.
I mean, he's a pompous, narcissistic prick. I mean, the Felger and Maz were playing the clip where he told the reporter to sit up and not slouch. It's like,
yeah, so Flores like he didn't get hit in the face. Flores went through three offensive coordinators and three offensive line coaches, two defensive coordinators in Miami. Judge fired his offensive line coach in the middle of his first year, fired his offensive coordinator in the middle of his second year. God. I mean, you know what this tells you? And I think that this is something that's if you're going to hire one of these guys, you absolutely have to take this into account, right? They have a very specific way of doing things. And if things aren't done that way, they're going to go crazy. I mean,
well,
like,
which is not good.
Like, and I honestly believe that's why you very rarely see Bill bring in somebody from the outside, right? Like, what does he do when people leave here? He promotes people from within who know the way it's done here. It's because Bill has the wisdom to know the way things work other places in the league and know that if he brings in somebody who isn't from his program, it could wind up blowing up on him. And you see, like, the way that, you know, I mean, like Chan Gailey, who I'm not going to argue that the guy is like, you know, Bill Walsh or anything, but like one of the easiest guys to get along with in the NFL, like literally couldn't get out of there fast enough last year, you know? And like Jason Garrett, who like has had his issues, is as nice a guy as you'll ever meet, like was at his wit's end in New York. And I'm not like saying this is a personal affront to Judge or to Patricia or to Flores, but if you aren't from that program, it's very difficult to work in a program that's like it.
Right.
And if you don't adhere to that program, if you're coming from the outside, you are going to have problems with the head coach, which, you know what that tells me, guys? If you're going to hire one of these guys, you have to be all the way in. You can't be halfway in. You know what I mean? Like, you can't. And even like, I think what happened in Houston, it's like Nick Caserio is patchworking a staff together. And it's like, And then he's expecting them all to work under the way the Patriots work, like kind of like, you know, adhere to, and it's not Nick's fault. He's never worked anywhere else, but it's like you put everybody in that sort of structure and you hold them to that standard and you're unrelenting the way that Bill Belichick's unrelenting in New England. And you've got guys like, you know, David Culley and Lovie Smith who coached in the league for like 20, 30 years.
Right.
Like, what the hell is this?
Okay, so if you're an owner, are you hiring someone from the Belichick tree?
Again, I think you'd have to be all the way in. I think every person has to have background in the system. Otherwise, I just...
All the way in, meaning that you would have... All the way in, meaning that you would have to hire an entire staff.
You would have to let that person hire the entire staff, and you'd have to make sure that the people that they hire know what they're getting themselves into.
All right, so
why isn't Josh getting... Is that why Josh isn't getting any calls?
I mean, look, Josh had the same issue in Denver. Like, Mike Nolan was his defensive coordinator the first year, you know? Like, this isn't new. This has happened, like, everywhere.
Is that why he's not getting any calls? Because Gerard Mayo is.
I think Josh has got an interest. It just hasn't been out there yet.
Who's the interest from?
I don't know specifically like which teams have put in requests, but I would think if the Patriots get eliminated on Saturday, some of that might come out. And I do think that there's the way it's been explained to me is his situation is a little bit different. In that he's not going to go and interview for five different jobs. Like, he's going to look at the requests. You know, if they get eliminated, he would look at the requests and then sort of pick and choose the ones that he thinks are right.
Well, it's nice that the McDaniels people have talked to you and told you that. Because, again, that's a little on the nose.
Does he have that luxury,
I'm not going to comment on that, Fred.
No, it's obvious. This goes along with the report that McDaniels doesn't want to be distracted during the week. Yeah, right.
But does he have that luxury? Is he that like in demand that he can make these teams wait to hire somebody else until...
No, I mean, here's what I can tell you about, like, because I don't think he's at the most in demand. Like, he's not like Dan Quinn, like, I think would probably be the most in demand coach right now. I don't think he's got that level of demand. But I think part of it for him was over the last couple of years, I think he had sort of come to the realization, maybe like, I may have to go to a place that's less than ideal if I want another shot. And like, if you look at, where their roster was the last couple of years, I think part of it was fueled by the fact that the roster was in a mess. And like, he knew, like, I'm not guaranteed to have my stock like maintain, you know, over the next 3 or 4 years because the roster's in a tough spot. Well, this offseason, they draft Mac Jones. They, I think, hit on a couple free agents. They hit on a couple draft picks. And now I think, you know, to some degree, the roster stabilized, which I think, you know, allows Josh to look at it and say, okay, like, maybe we're going to be pretty good for the next 2 or 3 years. So I don't have to jump at just whatever is out there. So I think maybe his mindset towards like these head coaching openings has gone back a little bit to what it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Is the Harbaugh news for real?
I think Harbaugh. So no one holds a grudge like Jim Harbaugh holds a grudge. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was happy about what happened at Michigan last year. I don't think he was happy about having to take a pay cut. Now, he didn't say anything, but he filed that away. And once he came back and reworked his staff and was able to win 11 games at Michigan this year, you know, I think there was a real feel there. He is going to make the people who made him take that pay cut squirm. And whether it's in order to get a raise at Michigan and a new contract, or it's in order to get the hell out of Michigan, like one or the other, like he was going to make the people who made him take that pay cut last year pay for it.
Could he affect where Deshaun Watson ends up, do you think?
Harbaugh?
Yeah, because the big talk was that is that maybe they were looking to completely redo everything Miami if they were going to get, you know, Deshaun Watson in there. He's a guy who had such success with Colin Kaepernick. Yeah. Maybe they
I don't think Miami, because Steve Ross, the owner there, his name is on the business school at Michigan. Like, I was told that Steve Ross is not going to be the guy that takes Jim Harbaugh away from Michigan. So I don't think that Miami is going to be the team that does that. But I do think like the Raiders and Bears are going to have an interest in him. Now, will the Bears be willing to pay what it takes to get him out of Michigan? I don't know. Are the Raiders going to move on from Rich Bisaccia? Like, say the Raiders beat the Bengals tomorrow. Do they move on from Rich Bisaccia? I think that's a real question. So, like, I think Harbaugh's got a real interest in the NFL. Do I think he's 100% like ready to leave Michigan yet? I don't know. I think that's going to sort of depend on what sort of offers, you know, he gets from the NFL level, because he had no NFL interest last year. I just think that where it stands right now, it's going to sort of, I think, come down to, you know, what's in front of him. And I don't think anybody knows exactly what's running through Jim Harbaugh's head right now. But I think, like, you know, sort of you look at it, if you're him, and it's the Raiders situation is a good one. The Bears situation is a good one. If they put something good in front of him, I think he thinks about leaving. Otherwise, I think he uses it as leverage to get a raise out of Michigan.
All right. We'll be back. More from Burt Breer. Here are the headlines.
Sports Hub headlines.
David Pastrnak had a hat trick. Tuukka Rask added 25 saves in his return, and the Bruins won their fourth in a row last night, 3-2 over Philadelphia at TD Garden. Their next game, part of a seven-game homestand, is tomorrow afternoon against Nashville. The NHL All-Star teams were announced yesterday. Patrice Bergeron was voted as the Bruins' representative for the Atlantic Division. Montreal's Chris Weidman suspended for one game for his headbutt to the face of the Bruins' Eric Haller. Patriots have listed 13 players as questionable for their first-round playoff game in Buffalo tomorrow night. They include Christian Barmore, Damian Harris, Dante Hightower, Isaiah Wynn, and Kyle Duggar. Houston Texans have fired head coach David Culley, and the Celtics will visit Philadelphia tonight. Marcus Smart is questionable. Grandy and Max have the pregame at 6:30 and the tip-off at 7 here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Sports Hub headlines are brought to you by Homes for Our Troops, helping severely injured post 9/11 veterans rebuild their lives in custom adaptive homes. Log on to HFOTUSA.org to learn more. I'm John Wallach. I'm Boston's home for sports. 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update at 8 o'clock.
98.5 The Sports Hub. Toucher and Rich.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Speaker. This is the home of the Bruins and the Celtics.
It is nothing but a thrill a minute.
And these guys,
oh my Lord, what could come next?
Toucher and Rich on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Clean sheets by the Descendants. Clean sheets mean a lot to a guy who sleeps on the floor. And he came home and he saw the sheets are dirty. And even though she'll never come clean, he knows it's true. Those sheets are dirty and so are you.
We haven't had any themed Fridays, Fred, this year so far. We have not come up with any.
I didn't put this in. This has always been a bad...
No. What I'm saying is we haven't had any themed Fridays. Like, we're kind of slacking.
I mean, we're giving everyone so much energy. I mean, we're dealing with being mentioned on the Feinbaum show. So, I mean, we got our bases covered. Have you ever been listening, you guys, to like a game on the radio, like a baseball game, and like the intro and outro music, like when they come back from break, is like this really cool band that no one knows about? Like the Tigers games when they had Ernie Harwell, it was like they played Too Much Joy. Like, going into it, I'm like, who the hell picked Too Much Joy? Is a good band. I'm like, who knows Too Much Joy?
Well, they have the 21-year-old who's making minimum wage engineering. He's like, well, if I'm not going to make any money and I have to sit here for 162 games, I'm picking my own music.
I just thought of Ernie Harwell, like, going, like, give me the Too Much Joy.
That's right.
I told you when they, Bert, you have family in Detroit. I told you when they, Ernie Harwell was, I don't know who to compare him to here. He did, you know.
Johnny Most?
Yeah, yeah.
All
right, yeah, that's a good
fair.
One.
That's fair.
Like, he's like the Vin Scully of Detroit. And WJR fired him, and they hired these two guys to take the job, and never have two guys been treated worse. And they would go to Harwell, and you expected Harwell to be, like, gracious, and he was like, no, they treated me bad. So these guys lasted a season, and they brought Harwell back. And now they're in Seattle. But, like, I mean, never have two people in radio had a worse job to go back into. All right, Bert, as we look at Saturday, is Josh Allen terrible in the cold? Is this what we're dealing with? He's a very bad quarterback in the cold?
We've seen all the statistics now, right?
Oh, so, I've seen them all, baby.
I mean, I think it's fair to ask the question. And they were, I mean, even like more recently against it.
Well, that's not.
Do we lose him?
We lost him.
Bill's Mafia. How dare you? How Bill? Dare you say bad things about our quarterback?
I mean, he's got a whole setup over there with a mic and his college degree in the background, and we can't hear him.
I can see him moving. I can see him talking.
Yeah, I can see it too. But somehow,
there you go.
All right, go ahead.
So. All right, I hit mute and unmute, and I don't know what happened there.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously the stats are out there. He did not look great in the first half against Atlanta when it was snowing a couple weeks ago. He did not look great in the first half against the Jets. Now, they've found something that makes them a little bit different. Like, I think over the last 4 or 5 weeks, they've sort of found their running game. And, like, I'm not saying it's something they can lean on, and they're not going to run the ball 35 times on Saturday night in all likelihood. But, you know, I think they've at least, you know, they've at least got, like, now that facet of their game where they can control down and distance a little bit more. And what's interesting about this to me is, like, you look at how they took advantage of the Patriots a couple weeks ago. It was with a lot of guys that were down the line on their depth chart because they were without Gabriel Davis and Cole Beasley. I believe both those guys were on the COVID list, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so now it's like, do they roll out there with the guys they rolled out there on December 6th, or do they roll out there with the guys they rolled out there on December 26th? And, you know, I think there's merit to finding a way to get Isaiah McKenzie more involved, even though you've got Cole Beasley back now. And I think there's a way they can keep the Patriots guessing there. So I think there's just some fascinating pieces to the chess match here. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's no question that, like, the cold, if we look at the history of it, would absolutely benefit the Patriots more than it would the Bills.
Is Mac Jones hurt?
I don't think he's hurt. I mean,
I heard.
Like, you heard that?
Yeah, I heard Judon and Mac Jones were hurt. I heard Mac Jones is, I mean, not like, you know, not going to play.
It would explain Judon's slow, the stats right. have slowed down significantly over the last month.
They have, yeah.
There's a rumor that he's got bad ribs. And then there's I've heard it, it's funny, Livshat's heard the same thing, that Jones, it's like it's a foot, knee, and shoulder thing, which would make sense because Bert. Like, I mean, this is a very long season for this kid who mm-hmm. didn't have an NFL body. I mean, you got to figure there's not a lot of gas left in the tank.
Well, and rookies, like, that's what happens too with rookies, you know, is that, like, because they don't really have a break. It's their last college season spills right into, like, the college all-star game, spills right into the combine. That didn't exist last year, but he's still doing that stuff.
Sure.
Into pro day, then into meetings, then into OTAs, then into mini – like, there's really no break.
Quarterback battle, and then and then you're thrown right into the season. Where he's been hit, you know.
And he's been knocked around. I think a big part of what's happened the last month, you know, is you're playing better teams, which means you're playing from behind more now. Which means you're playing in less advantageous down and distance situations, and they haven't been able to manage him the same way. And this is why I thought the first 3 months of the season, that was the genius of what Josh McDaniels had done, you know, is that he had consistently been able to manage the situations that Mac Jones was in. And I know people around here were complaining that they weren't throwing the ball more. Well, if the problem with that is if you're consistently throwing the ball more on early downs, there's a better chance that you're going to be in second and 12. There's a better, better chance that you're going to be in third and 9. And then, you know, the defense is going to have an open playbook against your quarterback. And I think that's what's happened the last few weeks is that they haven't been able to control that quite as much. And so you see Mac and you see Mac in third and long more, you see him playing from behind more. And that's when you're going to see the rookie in Mac Jones coming out. And I think he's shown a lot of good stuff. Like, I think he's shown some mental toughness in fighting through it.
No question.
He's shown competitiveness and all of that different stuff. But you also see the inconsistency that a rookie.
Yeah, he's been the best rookie quarterback. But are you now seeing the concerns of his arm strength come to fruition? There's a lot of people that cover the league that are saying, eh, this kid, maybe not the strongest arm now.
There's no question that like, if you watch him throw, well, just like, look at the difference between Trevor Lawrence throwing a ball and Mac Jones throwing a ball, or I mean, Josh Allen or Justin Herbert. Like, Mac, like, when you watch him throw, he has to put his whole body into every throw, right? Like, you watch it and it's like, oh, like, and a lot of these guys can throw from awkward positions and can throw, you know, across their body. And, you know, Mac can't do some of those things. And so, like, that means when you're developing him and when he's in trouble, you're threading the needle a little bit more. So he needs to be better in a lot of different areas.
Right.
To be as good as those other guys.
Okay.
Which, I mean, he is as ready to play in the NFL as I think any quarterback that's come into the league the last few years because of the program he came from.
Okay, but I have a question. If you're drafting a quarterback and you've seen Mac Jones this year, is it easier to teach the mental part of playing the position than it is to improve a guy physically? Like, because obviously you can improve physically. I mean, just get him in a weight program and get him working with professional coaches year-round. I mean, that stuff. But is it easier to teach someone the position than it is to help them out, to develop them physically? Or is it the opposite?
I think it's – I don't know how much – I think the capacity to grow should be – there should be more capacity to grow on the mental side than the physical side. I just think the way these guys come into the league – like, think about Mac Jones. And I agree. Like, he can grow physically, and there's a lot that he can do. I'm sure there's a lot that he can do to change his body and everything else. But it's not like this guy was playing at Eastern Illinois.
Right.
He was in Alabama strength program for four years. So, like, there's – I think there, you also have to, like, look at it and say, if the Alabama strength coaches could – it's like the same thing with Devontae Smith. You know what I mean? Like, Devontae Smith comes into the league, he's 175 pounds.
Right.
And you look at him, and it's like, well, sure, he could definitely put on weight. And the Alabama coaches tried. Like, that was a huge part of it for them. They eventually threw their hands up and said, this is just what he is, and we're going to get the most out of him, you know, at 175 pounds. And I think there's sort of the same thing with Mac, where it's like he was in the Alabama strength program for 4 years. So can he improve physically? Yes, absolutely. He's going to mature physically, all the rest of it. But like the idea that he's going to transform who he is physically, I don't think that's going to happen. Guys can transform themselves mentally, though.
So you and kind so, of – so basically you see probably why teams rightly or wrongly passed on him for other
quarterbacks. That's the issue, though. Like, so the reputation of Alabama kids in general.
Oh, the corners.
Is that they're maxed out when they get to the NFL.
They've been coached. Right. They've been coached up as far as you can coach a guy up. Yeah.
Right. And so, like, that's why Mac Jones was the 15th pick.
Yes.
And why those other four guys went in front of him. It's like you looked at the other four guys and it's like, okay, this is what he is now. And that's where he's going to be in 5 years. Whereas with Mac Jones, it was like, we love what he is right now, but is he ever going to be a whole lot more than that?
So you kind of see why guys passed on him for the other guys, rightly or wrongly. I mean, who knows how it will work out? But even after this season, he's had
the best year of any of the rookie quarterbacks. But I think any scout would have told you that, like, at this point, like, scouts could have told you today, a year ago, Mac Jones is the most prepared of the five guys to go in the five guys set to go in the first round.
Last year, Bert, he's the most ready for the NFL. Yeah, last year, Bert, that's what you said. You said this to us on the show: highest floor, lowest ceiling.
Okay, so my question to you is this: if you're the Patriots in the next couple drafts and it's the fourth round and you love a quarterback, do you take him?
I'm an advocate of taking a quarterback every year.
So am I. I'm on the record.
I have no problem. Like, what's the word? Like. You look. I think the best example of it was those '90s Packers. Do you guys remember that they drafted quarterbacks every year behind Favre, and it was like Matt Hasselbeck, Aaron Brooks, Mark Brunell, Ty Detmer, and they kept drafting guys behind Favre. Matt Hasselbeck was one of them. And what ended up happening? They had good backups for 3 years, and then they got draft picks back.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, and so
how much longer can you have Brian Hoyer anyway?
Well, that's true, yeah.
How much longer can you have Brian Hoyer?
Well, not next year.
And that was, guys, wasn't that what drafting Tom Brady was?
Sure.
I mean, they didn't draft Tom Brady thinking he was going to be the starter. They drafted Tom Brady like, hey, like, let's just take a quarterback here. We don't need one, but let's just take one and let's see if we can develop ourselves a backup. And he became the greatest player of all time. No one thought when they drafted him, no one in that building thought when they drafted him, like, we're drafting a guy who's even going to be a starter here. It was maybe this guy can be a quality, like, depth piece behind Drew Bledsoe. And obviously, like, you know, he became like something else entirely. But that's the whole concept of it, is that, like, if you keep drafting young quarterbacks, like, eventually you might hit on something like that, and that you have to get very lucky for that to happen. But at the very least, you're probably going to develop a few backups that you can flip for draft picks down the line.
I mean, you might hit the lottery and get Mike White. I mean, who knows what can happen, you know? And then, all right. Bert Breer, enjoyed the games this weekend in your halftime chats. And
you tune into those, Fred?
I have.
Feel free to ask questions.
Well, I got you for I don't want to dominate your life. I mean, I have you. I've watched them. I watch them.
I appreciate that.
I mean, you're always drunk, which is a bit of a problem. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not drunk.
I'm joking.
I have a beer with the fans. I'm a regular guy, Fred.
You don't have
I'm
to joking. Shotgun it.
Once an Ohio State kid, always an Ohio
exactly.
State kid.
Exactly. All right. Well, he's got that.
What
diploma.
School is that on your sweat on your hoodie there, Wallach? I've been looking at that the whole show.
Grand Canyon University.
Oh,
is that Lopes?
Is that what it is?
What loser in your family went there?
No, it's a pandemic purchase. Is what this was.
Is that where in 3 weeks you can get a nursing degree? Is that what
they have a basketball team, by the way.
Dan Marley used to be a head coach there.
By the way, school for ITT Tech.
By the way, that school. It's like a crazy religious school, too, so well done with that sweatshirt, supporting that nonsense.
Appreciate it.
But the
is Wallach in a cult now?
Yeah, basically, if you go to Grand Canyon University, it seems like you might be. But they have a good basketball team.
Yes, they do.
They have a basketball team that does well. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine in a million years going there, but nonetheless. All right. Bert Breer, thank you so much for the time, sir. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.